We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go. Hey guys, welcome to episode 418 of the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Today we roll on with our AL East preview. Today is the Tampa Bay Rays. I'm not going to call them Devil Rays. They're the Rays. They've earned some respect. They're a very good team and one that you'll see as we continue to talk. I had Kevin Weiss on. You can find him at Kevin Weiss _. He's the host of Locked On Rays podcast. Had an awesome, fun conversation with Kevin. But yeah, this is a team that I think is extremely, extremely talented, and they have a lot of problem areas for the Yankees, especially with, you know, Severino going down, and we obviously don't know how the season is going to unfold and how or when it will start and all those things. But if you think about a shortened season, the Tampa Bay Rays are going to be an issue. They have top three pitching that can compare to anybody, you know, in baseball at this point. I mean, and that's not an exaggeration. They're very talented. And they have a lot of guys on that offensive side that I think will surprise some people. So this is one of those teams that is, has been a thorn in our side for a long time. Yankees handled them better last year, but we know how much of a pain they were in 2018. And I think they're going to be an extremely tough challenge this year. And I think with the shortened season, it actually helps them out quite a bit. So Kevin and I talk about that. Kevin gets really deep into the team, some of the decisions that were made, talks about their farm system and, you know, what's coming up there, because they were ranked number one farm system in baseball by Keith Law. And yeah, if they have three healthy pitchers, then, you know, we talk about those scenarios and what those guys look like and, you know, kind of, you know, how they can really pan out and push this team pretty damn far in the playoffs if they're all pushing at 100% and, you know, performing to their abilities, because they're up there with some of the best in baseball. We also, towards the end, kind of get off on some tangents talking about the Tampa area, the Trop specifically, how there's, you know, a bunch of deals out there that have gone wrong with the Trop getting a new stadium. There's a whole Montreal aspect of this. So it was fun talking with Kevin about that and just getting a little bit of a glance inside a frustrated fan of the Rays and someone who's been covering the team for a while too. So I had a really fun conversation with him. So without further ado, here is Kevin Weiss, host of the Locked On Rays podcast, talking about the Tampa Bay Rays. All right, guys, continuing on with our AL East previews, we have the Tampa Rays, Mr. Kevin Weiss. You can find him at Kevin Weiss _. He's the host of Locked On Rays podcast. Kevin, my guy, what's going on, man? Thanks for joining us.
Just trying to get through this coronavirus pandemic. I'm like, I need some kind of sport, some kind of live sporting event.
Yeah.
I'm just going crazy. I'm like reading books now.
South Korean basketball, I hear, is coming up. Marble racing.
Oh, my God.
We got marble racing. I've seen some like vague Japanese baseball. Was it? I think maybe they're in like spring training or something. I don't know. Something's going on over there with them.
Possibly. I guess I'm just going to have to watch, like, it's just like Netflix, Hulu, and reruns of Rays seasons or sporting events on YouTube. Just like, it's ridiculous. Like, I turn on ESPN and they don't even know what they should just shut down ESPN until sports come back up. Cause they're like ranking, not to go off on a tangent, but they're like ranking college basketball players. And they've got like Walt Chamberlain going up against whoever that women's basketball player is from Oregon, Iwanesco. I don't even know,
yeah,
but
really
like,
good.
It's gotten to that point. It's really ridiculous.
No. So I'm interested in how you guys as a Rays, like, we have the luxury of like looking back at like a really long, you know, obviously illustrious history. The Rays, not a franchise that's been around forever. I mean, are you guys like going back and analyzing who looks best in the Rainbow Rays, like Fred McGriff, or is it Johnny Damon? Like, what are you guys doing looking back?
Yeah, we're starting to get to that point. We actually sort of did a similar thing with division preview. So really next week and beyond is when we're going to dive deep into that stuff. We'll probably do the good era of the Rays, which started from 2008 onward, and then just the disastrous Devil Rays era from, you know, 98, 99 to 2007. So we'll probably have it like, you know, BC, AD sort of a thing with, right. with the Rays. So, I mean, it's almost more fun to talk about the failures of the franchise as
there's more content
in addition
there.
To the successes as well. So, yeah. We'll figure something out. We'll probably do some, you know, best and worst of all time and look back at, you know, the game 162 and the World Series, playoff run in 2008. So we'll definitely be creative with what we do content wise for sure.
Cool. So how are the Rays, like what's going on in quote Rays camp? Or do you have guys staying around? They all going home? It seems like now that we kind of understand that this thing is not going to be a short-term deal, that people are starting to head back home, even a lot of the guys that wanted to stay or were originally planning on staying.
Yeah, it's really weird because the Rays have a lot of international players and they really can't go home, or a lot of them That's can't true. Go home at this point. Like the Rays had just signed Yoshi Tsutsugo out of Japan. And I think he had just found a new house in St. Petersburg, but he's not going back. He's staying in St. Pete. So he's sort of in limbo. I guess it's got to be the weirdest season for him, because the transition was already difficult enough from going from Japan to America and trying to learn, you know, the different pitching styles and just adjusting to American life. And now this coronavirus thing hits, and now he's got to deal with all that's come about with that too. But you know, the other thing too, I guess it's probably a little bit easier for the Rays than some other teams because their spring training facility is in Port Charlotte,
sure,
which is about an hour and a half from St. Petersburg, Tampa Bay area. So it's not so much of a logistical issue as, say, the Yankees, where you've got Tampa, New York, and what you're doing there. So I think a lot of the players are either staying in their rental homes in Port Charlotte, or they have rental homes in Tampa, St. Petersburg that they're able to stay in. But the message has been, at least from what I've heard, is, you know, with everything being closed, from restaurants, bars, gyms, fitness centers, everything, that it's just like, hey, quarantine yourself, stay healthy. We'd rather you be healthy and out of shape than to be sick and have something that prolongs you going forward. So I think they're handling it just about like every other team, but it might even be a little bit easier than some of those teams that have to have those long distances between their spring training facility and their real facility, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true, because they probably do. A lot of the guys have, you know, whether it's a full-time residence or at least a temporary residence in mm-hmm. St. Pete, Tampa area. So it probably does make things a little bit easier for you guys. Cool, man. Well, yeah, not to get too much into to what's happening in the world. I think we're all kind of understanding it and right. would like a distraction. So let's give that to the people. The 2019 was an interesting year. You guys won 96 games. You had a hell of a season, really, really did. And, you know, I think it probably could have been even a little bit different if you didn't hit some injuries early on in the season. Looking back at the 2019 season, what's your big takeaway from not only the regular season, you know, how Cash did, I think, a phenomenal job. I think he's one of the best managers in baseball with the creativity that he uses. He's different than Madden. He's not like the crazy mm-hmm. guy, but he's just, right. I feel like, more strategic. Obviously he does use the numbers quite often, but yeah. So what are the overall takeaways from regular season? And then, you know, obviously getting bumped by the Trastros in the postseason.
I like that. I like Trastros. We're trying to trademark that. We're trying to get something going with that.
Yeah.
By the way, when the Rays do play the Astros at the Trop sometime in April, we're going to try to bring those like mini trash bins that a lot of people have in their bathrooms and just mm-hmm. bang them together and try to do as much taunting as we can with that.
There you go.
But yeah, the 2019 season was crazy because there were only three players that stayed healthy all season long. The rest of the roster had at least one stint, and a lot of them multiple stints, on the injured list. And for the team to still win 96 regular season games like that is sometime in the summer, where the Rays literally only had Ryan Yarbrough and Charlie Morton as their healthy starters. They had Blake Snell out, Tyler Glasnow was out, and Yanni Chirinos was out. And they still managed to find a way to win games and stay in that wild card race. So, you know, assuming that the team is able to even just stay a little bit more healthy than they were last year, and, you know, that's not necessarily a given, but there's a lot of confidence in this team going forward this year. But, yeah, with the Astros thing, it does make you wonder about – because there was the reports of Tyler Glass now tipping his pitches. I do think that the Astros probably had something in on that, and that there was some shenanigans involved, I would say, with that, which makes it, you know, it's just,
I mean,
it
you
sucks
have to assume that you have to assume that at this point.
Yeah.
Right? That's where you have to go.
He had been unhittable literally all season long. And then you run into the Astros and that's what happens. And yeah, the Astros are a good hitting team, but they're a much, much better hitting team when you add in the fact that they know what's coming too. And the fact that they see what's going on as well. So I think if there had been no pitch tipping involved or nothing, I mean, if the game was played clean, that the Rays probably would have had a good shot at making it to the World Series, the way that the team was finally getting healthy at the right time. And they had their order in place. They had Tyler Glass now back healthy. They had Blake Snell back healthy. And Charlie Morton was dealing like he was all season long. I mean, we saw, I don't know how many people saw that AL wildcard game between the Athletics and the Rays, but the Rays just looked so dominant against them too. So it's just, and for the Yankees too, it, like, what could have been if the Astros didn't cheat, what that 2019 season could have, how it could have ended or made out for both teams.
Yeah, I mean, we could keep going back to 2017 also. You know, in seven games. But it's interesting because you guys, I mean, the kitchen sink was out. You guys were pitching so well against them too. The fact that they got to Glasnow, it was just, now you look back at it like, man, things are just not the way that they were supposed to be, I think. And I think the next series, you talked about them going to the World Series, the way things were set up. It would have been interesting because I think that, you know, the way that the pitching had set up for the Rays that would have been with the Yankees definitely would have had an advantage in the pitching because of the way that it laid out, because of, you know, how you guys would have had to beat the Astros. So it would have been a tough series, but you guys were really hot, obviously. And in the postseason, that can go a long way. Talking Kevin Cash, like, what are your overall, how do you feel about Kevin Cash? I mean, he was up for manager of the year last year. Obviously Baldelli won, but I think Cash was probably right there.
Yeah, I think he's definitely one of, you know, it's kind of hard to rank managers because it just is, but I think he's arguably one of the top five managers in baseball for sure, with what he's able to do with the roster and the payroll constraints and everything like that. And you made a good point about him and the comparisons to Joe Maddon. Joe Maddon is very outspoken and he's kind of like the hipster manager type. Like, he's got a glass of wine while he's doing the post-game press conferences. Kevin Cash kind of more tells it like it is and doesn't really like to stir up the pot as far as comments and those sorts of things go. But, you know, as far as what he gets handed down from him, from the analytical department and the front office and everything like that, and him embracing it, I think goes a really long way. And his ability to relate to players is huge as well. Like, there's so much roster shuffling and so many trades, and like, no, the Rays are a team where literally every season has so many different players from the previous year, and being able to get everybody on the same page and not have so much infighting and clubhouse problems going on, I think really is a testament to what he does. Not to mention, as far as the switches and utilizing the opener and knowing when to take a pitcher out. And, you know, some of the best things are, when he gets, I mean, he confuses other managers too. Like, he confused Alex Cora with the whole having the relief pitcher play first base and then bringing him back into relief, like doing all that sort of stuff, which it caused like a 22-minute delay in the game. So, I mean, he's definitely an elite manager. I actually saw something that was really interesting. He's actually younger than Tom Brady, believe it or not. So this guy has a long way to go in his managerial career. And he's already in, I think, you know, his fifth, sixth season with the Rays. And I think it just works out because a lot of it is the front office with the Rays kind of giving a lot of insight and a lot of intel into this is what you should do. And, you know, I think Kevin Cash does have some free reign, but it's not just about him. It's really about the entire front office and the analytical department and everything that goes in with that as well. Now, he has done some things that kind of make you scratch your head a little bit. Like, Ryan Yarbrough was one out away from a perfect game and he takes him out. And I know you want to try, you do want to preserve the win and do everything that you can, but one out away, just let the guy have that. The other thing was sometimes he would take Charlie Morton out a little bit too early after 80 pitches and go to a reliever. And this was at the point in the season when the team's relief corps and bullpen wasn't as strong as it was later on in the season. And it was actually a game against the Red Sox, which, you know, the guy that I can't remember who Cash brought in, but he gave up like a 3-run homer the minute that Charlie Morton exited. So some little things, I mean, it's kind of ticky tacky, but yeah, for the most part, I mean, I don't know if there's another manager that the Rays and Rays fans would rather have at this point, but of course it, like everybody's going to have, like everybody complains about umpires. Everybody has a complaint about managers as well. So that just kind of goes with the territory. But I mean, on the whole, I would say he's definitely an A manager for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you can limit the amount of things you can complain about, that's a good thing. I mean, it's not.
Yeah,
you're gonna complain about things because that's what we do sometimes. We have to. We need those venting points. But yeah, the majority of it has been good stuff. So I think to talk about 2020, a nice perfect bridge. You brought up the front office along with Cash. Looking at 2020 and the players that are there and what's currently happening and who the guys you're gonna lean on. I got to look at your front office and what they did to the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Chris Archer deal. Because you look at that deal and it changed the team. I mean, absolutely changed the team from a guy that had a name that was struggling for however long. It seemed like for a very long time, Archer was struggling. I feel like it was a very long time ago where we saw a good Chris Archer. Mm-hmm. To getting in return Austin Meadows, who's probably, if not the best position player on your team, and then Glasnow as well, getting, you know, a top flight frontline type guy. It changed the team completely. So, yeah, going into 2020, talk about your front office a little bit and that trade specifically. But those guys seem like they're going to be leading your team going into the year.
Yeah, it's crazy. And the Rays also got a throw-in prospect, Shane Boz, who happens to throw like 100 and is now one of the top pitching prospects in the organization. So, yes, the Rays absolutely fleeced the Pirates, and that is why Neil Huntington doesn't have a job anymore. Mm-hmm. But honestly, like, I think this team on paper, again, everything goes okay and they still stay relatively healthy. I mean, Kevin Kiermaier is going to get injured this season. That's just what he does. He gets injured every season and he misses like 30, 40 games at least. But on paper, I think not only the Pirates trade, but what they did this offseason, like I mentioned, signing Setsugo and trading for Jose Martinez and Randy Arozarena and adding Manny Margot. And yeah, they traded Tommy Pham, who was their top position player by WAR last season, but getting a top shortstop prospect in Xavier Edwards and Hunter Renfro, who I think really could have a comeback season this year, fully recovered from that foot ankle injury that he had with the Padres. And then you have a healthy pitching staff as well added to that. I think this team has the potential to win as many, if not more games than last season. And I wouldn't be surprised to, I don't want to say they're going to win the division because I still think even with the Yankees having some guys going down, that's going to be really tough to do. But I could see them sort of like what the Nationals did where they get in via the wild card and make it to the World Series and win the World Series. I'm not going to say this Rays team is going to win the World Series, but I could legitimately see them playing for a World Series. Now, if they're going against the Dodgers or something like that, then yeah, all bets are off. They're probably going to lose that series. But this team is a team that's capable of contending for a World Series. I think they're the best offensive team that they've been in a while. They've got the best depth that they have in a while. You could argue they've got one of the top three or four pitching staffs, rotations in baseball. And then you add in the bullpen too, which assuming that a guy like Jose Alvarado, lefty who throws a 99 mile an hour sinker ball, that he gets back on track, and that Nick Anderson, who was acquired from the Marlins at the trade deadline last year, pitches like he did with the Rays, and the development and just the fact that like Brandon Lau for example, he only played 82 games last season. He was an all-star. And then he missed basically the entire second half of the season. Like, you get him for at least 130, 140 games. That's huge. Same thing with Yandy Diaz, a guy who's found his power stroke in Tampa Bay, but just couldn't stay healthy. Instead of getting 80, 90 games from him, you get another 130, 140 games from him. That's huge. And they finally have depth in the outfield, which is something that they had been needing for a long time. Because like I mentioned, Kiermaier is probably going to go down at some point. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the Rays trade him after this season. But they've got Manny Margot as his backup, Randy Arozarena as maybe the third string guy, who last season in AAA batted 350 with the Memphis Redbirds for the St. Louis Cardinals and really was tearing it up in spring training.
He's got a really good name too.
Yeah, I say that five times fast. Yeah. But they're just good. I think I don't see a lot of weaknesses on this team. Maybe the only like major weakness is the catcher spot as far as hitting is concerned. Like Mike Zunino, he's good defensively, great defensively, but he batted well below the Mendoza line last season. Now they expect him to take a big leap forward this season because, I mean, the argument is, well, he spent all of last year trying to learn the new pitching staff coming over from Seattle, and that took a majority of his time, the bulk of his time. He couldn't really get he didn't have time to hit and learn the pitcher's tendencies and everything. Now he's got that second year under his belt. They assume that he's going to get better offensively, but that's not a given. So him and the backup catching spot, those are probably the two biggest question marks as of right now. Otherwise, I mean, the team looks pretty darn stacked and solid top to bottom, I would say.
How confident are you? Because you're talking about the pitching staff being one of the best, and I think you're right if they're healthy, but I think the health is a serious concern for sure. When you talk about Snell, who had an injury affected 2019, Glass now as well, but started off as one of the best pitchers in baseball and then got injured. And then Charlie Morton obviously climbing up there in age, and who knows, there could be some kind of a drop off there. You never know. He might revert back to the old Charlie Morton, the guy that didn't know how to use spin rate. You never know. Just one of those things. I think that's probably one of those things up in the air. And we could obviously say that with the Yankees. Injuries have already happened.
Right.
There is a top flight guy that we have. You guys have those guys if they're on the field. So yeah, how confident are you that they could stay on the field?
Yeah, it's interesting because I mean, with this whole coronavirus thing going on, that probably helps Blake Snell in some respect, as far as he had that cortisone shot, maybe gives him some more time to heal on his own. But yeah, that is a huge question. That's not a given. Again, I would assume that at least one of those guys, if not multiple guys in the starting rotation, could hit the IL at some point. Yeah, Charlie Morton getting another year older, that could make a big difference. Mm-hmm. Tyler Glass now, I mean, there was something unreported that he had off-season surgery that it wasn't reported until right before spring training. So that's a little bit of a problem right there. And then of course, Blake Snell with what he has going on. But I think at the Rays this season, I think it's almost like out of the question that they'd be as injured as they were last season. But if that does happen, I think they've got a little bit more in reserves as far as Brennan McKay, top flight prospect. They could maybe go to him for more of an extended look. He got a little bit of a taste of the action last year, and I think he's going to make some strides, or could make some strides. Another guy, Brent Honeywell, who you talk about guys being unable to stay healthy. He gets injured. He's had multiple Tommy John surgeries, and he's been one on the Rays top prospect list like every year for the last 5 years, and has just been trying to get from AAA to the majors, but some kind of injury always impacts him. Maybe this is the year that he takes that step forward. And of course, they could also go the long relief role, opener, long relief with a guy like Anthony Bonda or Trevor Richards. So they've got some guys that they can rely upon. But yeah, that is no guarantee that all those guys stay healthy. I really think out of the big three, so to speak, Blake Snell, Tyler Glass, now Charlie Morton, the guy who could really emerge as the true ace of the group is Tyler Glass now. I don't necessarily see him stepping back to the days where he was with the Pittsburgh Pirates, because they just had this weird philosophy of, we just want you to throw sinker balls and don't throw your fastball up in the zone, and don't use your curveball that much. Like, he actually this couple weeks ago, he blasted the Pirates front office for not giving him like any analytical data or giving him any tips or suggestions on how to become a better pitcher. But and he's a young guy. He's an Adonis as far as he's basically a physical specimen.
I didn't realize he was 6'8", actually, until I was looking up some stuff when I was, I didn't realize he was that tall. I knew he was tall, but 6'8".
And he's well built too. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean anything when you're pitching and trying to stay healthy on the field. But I think he's actually the guy that people should watch out for if he's able to stay healthy for much of the season as far as taking that next step. He's learning a third pitch, a splitter. We'll see how effective it is when the season starts, but that might be the guy that emerges as the top guy and you know, we also shouldn't not mention Yonny Chirinos and Ryan Yarbrough. Those are really good number fours and number fives too.
I don't think it'd be crazy by any means, or I don't think many people would be surprised if we, you know, look back and the season happening and we see Glasnow as the number one guy. I mean, when he's healthy and on the mound, I mean, he's got dominant stuff. I think he's put enough tape down We've seen how much he's progressed as a pitcher, because there's definitely that maturation process that's happened with him. For whatever reason, the Pirates just can't identify that. They don't identify good pitching for the last 5-6 years, apparently.
Yeah, it seems like every guy that leaves them ends up being better somewhere else.
Significantly
like
better.
Yeah. Countless examples.
Yeah. It's really bad.
Yeah. I think they need to like just totally renovate whatever they're doing in their front office and whatever metrics they're doing. And like, look at Chris Archer. Like, he's gone to the Pirates and has gotten significantly worse.
They need to live in the bizarro world and just go do the opposite of what they would normally do. And then they would have Glasnow, Charlie Morton, and Gerrit Cole, and they'd be dominant.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm like a prospect, like a high school college prospect, and I get drafted to the Pirates, I'm like, offer me like a $20 million signing bonus, because I don't want to sign with you guys.
Yeah, it's like, I just can't wait to get to that next team, because I know I'm going to be dominant. Just like, let's get this out of the way. That's interesting. I think the health is a big deal. Obviously, Glasnow is one of those guys that, as a Yankees fan with a shortened season, so this is what I was talking about with you before we started recording. I think the short season, if that is the way that we do this, and baseball doesn't try to be dumb and like force 162 games into a very short amount of time, or try to push it until Christmas, you know, if we actually do end up with a shorter season in some respects, I think it does make the Rays a very dangerous team because of the top three pitching. Like, those guys are very, very, very top heavy good, dominant good. And like you said, 4-5 are no slouches either. They have places where they can go. They have a good bullpen that they can rely on. So I do see them. And the other thing is, I see them making a lot more contact, hitting the ball differently than some of these other teams. And I think, you know, restarting all this stuff again could probably get them off to a quicker start than some of these guys that are swing and miss and home run guys. So I think you guys are a dangerous team. Unfortunately, it doesn't bode well for the shorter season. But one thing I want to, before we get out of here, two things I want to talk about. One, we'll leave the stadium for the last thing, okay?
Because I got some
thoughts on that. I was down.
All right.
We actually had an event down there, so it was the first time I had gone down there. But before that, the minor league system. Keith Vaughn labeled you guys number one system in the bigs. Obviously, people, you know, who know much about the prospects or following any list, they know about Wander Franco as, you know, one of the top, if not the top guy down there coming up. When do you expect him at some point for the Rays to be a regular guy in the bigs? And then, yeah, tell us a little bit more about this depth of farmhands you have.
Yeah, Franco's interesting because like every Rays fan just wants him to be called up already.
Yeah.
And we got to remember, he just turned 19 years old and he ended his season last year in A ball. So, and the Rays like to try to save cost any way they can. So they're not going to expedite the process to call him up as much as fans want to see him in a Rays uniform. So I don't think he's going to get the call this year, especially with the fact that September rosters have gone from 40 men to 28 men. So it would have to be some, like, you'd almost have to have like three shortstops get injured in a span of a short amount of time for him to see action with the Rays. But I do think 2021 is definitely a real possibility, which it's a very interesting case for the Rays, because not only do they have Wander Franco, but they've got a lot of other high end elite middle infield type guys that could play second base or shortstop. And the question is, what do they do with Willy Adames? They tried to move him maybe to third base, or move Wander Franco to third base, or one of these other guys. So that's going to have to be a question that gets answered within the next couple of years, because Adames is actually a really, really good player. You're talking about a shortstop that's got 20, 25 home run potential, and that really established himself the second half of last season as one of the top gloves at the shortstop position. If you look at any of the metrics, you know, defensive runs saved, defensive war, whatever MLB has with their new outs above average, all that sort of stuff, it all is favorable to Willy Adames. I mean, you can just Google Willy Adames relay and you're going to see some amazing stuff from him with the glove. Now, as far as the rest of the system goes, it's, again, pretty heavy on middle infield types and right-handed pitchers. And that, I mean, that's what the Rays do, is they want to cultivate as many pitchers as possible, because they found out that the formula to winning and competing in the AL East and throughout Major League Baseball is arms and defense. That's the way they go about it. But Brennan McKay is another guy that, again, he's almost to the point where he's grown out of that prospect stage. But Shane Boz, the player to be named later that was acquired from the Pittsburgh Pirates, he's actually one of the top five or six prospects that the Rays have right now. Brent Honeywell, like I mentioned, Shane McClanahan's actually a lefty that throws upwards of 99, graduated from the University of South Florida, so he's a hometown kid as well. Then you've got guys like Joe Ryan, who was the Rays minor league pitcher of the year. He kind of came out of nowhere, and I want to say he finished the season in Double A last year. So there's a lot of guys. Obviously, it starts with Wander Franco, but other names to watch out for, Vidal Brujan would be another guy. He's another one of those second base shortstop types. But you know, it's really their top 15 guys, I think, at some point are going to have a shot at making the majors. It's really just a question of when that will be. But right now, the team, I don't see them calling up a lot of prospects this season, because I think they've got so much depth on the regular season roster. I didn't mention even a guy like guys like Nate Lowe and Brian O'Grady and some of those guys and Daniel Robertson, Joey Wendell, all those guys are still on the team and provide depth. So that's something that people have to remember too, that, you know, if there's a year where if they do get hit with the injury bug, like they were last year, I think they'd be able to withstand it a little bit more than in past seasons.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. They are an interesting team this year. And I obviously, like we said earlier, Kevin Cash gets a lot out of his guys too. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think there's a future that is very bright for you guys. Unless you're in the stadium. Cause then it's, you know, yes. it's not bright. There's nothing. So I took my son to the game, and I'm ashamed to say that it was his first baseball game. It was really one of those things where I'm like, man, this is a really good opportunity. He's young. He's 2 years old. At that point, he was under two. And, you know, there wasn't a good opportunity for him to go to a Yankee game. It's hot during the day. Like, it just wasn't a good situation for him.
Right.
We were indoors. It was a night game. We were on the road. Like, the nap schedules were off. So we're like, you know, he's going to go to the game. So, yes, I will never tell him that his first game was in Tampa. I'll just tell him that it was a Yankees game. But he loved the fish tank, and the stingray tank in the center field was pretty cool. What's the plan there? Cause I know that they had in Ybor, right? They had the plans at some point, they were drawn up, and then what, city council said no, or what is the situation with the Rays? Because they got to get out of the trap at some point in the near future. I got to believe if they're going to stay in that area.
Yeah. Well, let me ask this. When did you take your son to the trap? What time of year was it?
It was July. It was the beginning of July, July 6th, actually.
Okay. Now, did you prefer the air? Did you like the air conditioning?
No, the air conditioning was good. I'll give you the air. The air conditioning was nice. It was, and that was one of the reasons why he could go. So, yeah. And so, yeah, there were some things, but what it reminded me of, it was like a minor league hockey arena. That was like the vibe I got because of like the purple, you know, like the lights and stuff. But yeah, I mean, like the actual game, like being in there, the fan experience, because you're so close, was good.
Yeah, it's weird because, honestly, they've come up with this whole Montreal split city proposal. And from what I've heard is that like people in Montreal citizens aren't really on board. Like the majority disapprove of them building a new stadium for 41 home games or 40 home games, whatever they're going to wind up doing there. As our Rays fans are upset about the prospect of their team splitting half the season, the second half of the season, in another country too. So really it's still up in the air. Ownership, Stu Sternberg, keeps pushing the idea, keeps saying, hey, this is our only real legitimate chance to stay, in the Tampa Bay area. A lot of people are calling his bluff, although, the mayor of Tampa, Jane Castor, it seems to be warming up to the idea. So somehow, some way, Stu Sternberg could get two new stadiums from two cities in two different countries. But I honestly would not be surprised to see, yeah, the Rays, they can't, if they build a new stadium, it can't be in St. Petersburg. It can't be in Pinellas County. It has to be in Hillsborough County. It has to be
Hillsborough County is Tampa on the other side of the bridge.
Yes, exactly. So really within the Tampa city limits, or right off of, for those that may or may not be familiar where the Seminole Hard Rock Casino is, there's some land out there right off the interstate that you could put it. If not, maybe go back to the Ybor City concept plan. But
why did that go down? Was it too expensive?
Yeah, so the it was actually the Rays that threw that plan down, saying they didn't have enough detail or information on it. It seemed kind of shady that why would they put so much time into doing all the renderings and and everything for an $800-900 million stadium, and they're like, no, well, yeah, we're gonna go forward with this. So
oh, I thought
there's
it had
some
something
people
to do
that
with the region. I thought it had something to do with the city. I didn't realize it was the team. That
yeah,
sounds
no.
Worse.
Now it could be a little bit of. There have been some talks about maybe the city not wanting to front as much money as Stu Sternberg and ownership would have liked. That might ultimately have been what killed it. Because originally, you know, the stadium, I guess it would cost between $800-900 million. And Stu, I think, was quoted as saying that he would be willing to pay up to $150 million. So that is the public. That is the local taxpayer putting forth about four fifths of the cost of a new stadium. You know, not sure how well that flies considering how long the Rays have had a very low payroll and have traded off assets and have gotten rid of stars. Now they've been competitive and they've won games and done everything like that on the field, which is great, but they haven't necessarily endeared themselves to the Tampa Bay area like the Tampa Bay Lightning have and some of the other sports teams and everything like that. But honestly, I think this is going to drag on and drag on until that lease ends in 2027 in St. Petersburg. But if I had to guess, I want to say that I think they're going to find, I mean, if there's a sports organization in a group of brains that could figure out how to make that split city concept work, it is the Tampa Bay Rays. I mean, they find ways to win 96 games with a $60 million payroll. So I think they can figure out how to split their season between two cities and two different countries. But what
if they were to successfully pull that off and it actually worked, which is a very, very far-fetched plan, I think. But if they were to do that and they were to actually recoup some of this money and both places were okay with doing something like this, mm-hmm. I mean, it would definitely set a new model for some of the smaller market teams.
Right.
But it's so far-fetched to me because of the money and because of the, you know, the facilities that you have to do. I mean, the people, some teams struggle just with one city and the amount that they have to, you know, draw to cover expenses and to make profits and all these things and put a team on the field to go into two is ambitious.
Right. And the other thing too, is like, you know, where, I mean, yes, I get the Florida sports fan is totally different than the New York sports fan and the Boston sports. We're very fair weather. You got to like really give us a reason to go to your game. And I think if and having the stadium in St. Petersburg, making us drive. Yeah. To a lot of people driving an hour and a half, for a 7 o'clock game doesn't mean much to a lot of other hardcore sports fans, but for Tampa Bay and Florida area fans, when we could be outside or at the beach or doing a million other things, it gives us a reason now. As long as that it can't withstand a full season in the Tampa city limits, or they don't want to try. You know, with, I'm not sure if you've heard, but Orlando is trying to make a case for getting a pro sports team now too. So that could also be another possibility as well, where the Rays could, if Orlando gives them a good enough offer, and that's something the Orlando, the city of Orlando has done before, is give pro sports teams pretty nice lucrative deals, i.e. The Orlando Magic getting like a $500-600 million facelift to their arena, that they could possibly lure the Rays to Orlando, which honestly I wouldn't be that opposed to, because Orlando and Tampa is only 70 miles apart, separated by the I-4 corridor. I mean, I do this all the time. I like rank the counties where the Rays would be most successful in. And like in the Tampa Bay region area, like Pinellas is pretty much at the bottom. Like I've got Hillsborough, I've got Pasco, which is the county just north of the city of Tampa. I've got Polk County, which is where Lakeland is, which is separated by Orlando and Tampa. It's right smack dab in the middle. Then I've got, I'd almost rather have the team in Orlando than Pinellas County, St. Pete. And then I've got St. Pete, Pinellas fifth. Like it's just such,
it's in the worst spot possible.
Yes, exactly.
Ironically enough, the ideal spot is exactly where the Yankees have spring training. It seems
that's what my co-host on the Locked On Rays podcast, we talk about like trying to find a way to just uproot the Tampa Tarpons now, but the spring training facility of the Yankees, like right. That would be the spot right next to Raymond James Stadium.
Yeah.
You got the parking, you got everything you need right there.
Dale Mabry and all that stuff is there.
Yes.
Yeah.
It would. I mean, if there was some deal, we'll trade you Blake Snell, Tyler Glass now, and Charlie Morton for the rights to that stadium forever.
Done. Like I think they would do that.
Yeah. Because that is prime real estate. And I mean, again, you go back to the city of Tampa, like the Tampa Bay Lightning, they are, every game is a sellout. And yes, they're very good. And I know it's 40 home games compared to 80, which is different. But and you have a lot of snowbirds that move back up north in the summer season, so the population in the Tampa Bay area decreases naturally. But I mean, I've sat in traffic at 5 o'clock on a July day. It doesn't seem like it seems like more people are moving to the area than leaving the area. But either way, I still think they can make it work if they put it in the right place. And I mean, there had been talk about, yeah, doing the split city proposal and building a new stadium in St. Petersburg. I mean, you might as well pack up and walk away. Like, that's ridiculous. Like, that won't work either. You're given, it's just so frustrating. It's been one of it's like the coronavirus stuff. Like, we're getting tired of talking about that. Yeah. We've been tired of talking about the stadium stuff for a long time. And it is not, it's going to be one of those things that it's going to continue to evolve and develop. And there's always some kind of, like the guy who's trying to buy a share of the Rays up in Montreal, he's always opening up his mouth. His name is Bromfman, I think is his last name. He's a really shady character, I'll just say. But he's always like slamming the Tampa Bay area and talking about how much Montreal is a metropolis and a much more cosmopolitan city and a better place to be. Like, I think he's trying to like steal the team from Stu Sternberg in some way, shape, or form. But like, honestly, with some of his comments and some of his family history, you can look it up on Google, because everything on the internet is true. But he's got a little bit of a shady background, I'll just say that. So I'm not sure I'd really even want to be in business with that guy who's trying to get this Montreal thing up and running. But yeah, it's just really crazy. So that's why we're trying to keep everything on the field. Like, we're just excited about on the field. And now that's almost been taken away from us now.
Yep.
Because with this coronavirus pandemic, yeah. Now we can't even have baseball going on. So it's like, we're hurting here. I'll just leave it at that. Although Tampa Bay, we just got Tom Brady. So
we got a 43-year-old Tom Brady. I don't, you know, we can.
Yeah. He's
it's a fun name. I mean, it's,
I'll just say this. I think that, Bucks will find a way.
Quickly. I'm a horrible, disgusting, miserable Jets fan. So I am very happy that Tom Brady is no longer anywhere in my sight anymore. Out of sight, out of mind. He's gone for the rest of my life. I don't care where he is now. So I'm happy you have him. I'm very happy.
I'll say this, like, the Bucks, no matter who they sign, they could sign Peyton Manning in his prime, Tom Brady in his prime. The Bucks will still find a way to go 7-9 or 6-10. Something's going to happen. I mean, you get Darrelle Revis and you find a way to screw it up. Like that's just what the Buccaneers do. They're just a lousy organization. They always have been, probably always will be. And a 43-year-old Tom Brady isn't going to change that, especially after he gets sacked in week 4 and misses the rest of the season. Just going to leave it at that.
I could probably go on for another half hour on this, but yeah. It'll be very interesting to see the Bruce Arians system with Tom Brady, 43 years old. It's just it's like a round peg in a square hole. Like, what are we doing here? It's a little strange. So I assume that he's going to bring in his guys and his system and do all those things, but that ain't Bruce Arians. It's weird.
It is going to be really weird. And again, whoever you bring in, I just don't think it's going to work. I really don't think it's going to work. And honestly, I am kind of glad that Jameis Winston won't be returning to the team. But maybe you should have maybe addressed things in the draft. And just again, what the Bucks do is just, it's backwards. They're basically the opposite of the Rays in terms of like building a cohesive organization in a winning culture, in a winning organization. They just do everything. And like that, and that's what they do. Like with Tom Brady, every once in a while, they'll go out and sign a big name and it ends up not working or not making any bit of a difference. They're still gonna, they're the Browns of the South. That's what they are. And it just seems like it's always going to be that way, but I am probably going to be a sucker.
Super Bowl in relative recent history ish.
Yeah. The last time the Bucks had made the playoffs, though.
Yeah, I don't know. You have a cool pirate ship. Like, that thing's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
There's some things going on over there. You got a Stingray tank and a pirate ship. I mean, it's like that. You guys should go to Orlando. It's Disney.
I've proposed that maybe the Rays could just try to find a way, do what like the Oakland or then the Oakland Raiders and the Athletics did, where the A's play the games and in the Raiders Stadium. Do that with Raymond James Stadium in Tampa Bay. Maybe you get more fans there. I don't know.
That would be, although that's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
That's
although the only problem with that is that it rains every day in the summer. So
right, that's true. Good point.
And so it's maybe they
insanely
can
insanely hot.
Yeah. Yes. That's the other thing. Maybe if they can propose to like get a retractable roof, if that happened, then yeah, make that work. Get something going with that. That might be the best course of action.
Last thing I'll say on this whole thing. I'm sorry, but Tom Brady going down there. I haven't heard this before, but I'm thinking it's like he's been chasing Jeter for a long time. Like there's always a Jeter chase.
Yeah.
Possibly the wives, Giselle, now back with Hannah Davis, probably going to go on Davis Island. Like this very well could have been orchestrated by the wives.
It makes sense. It makes sense. They want to get out of the Northeast.
Yeah.
Soak up the sun in Tampa Bay. They've already got articles out there. Like which house is Tom Brady going to buy? Which $12 million mansion is he going to purchase? And I guess Derek Jeter had like $1 million spring training property. I think that Brady's going to want something a little bit bigger and just more pristine than that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised, but yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see, but yeah, he'll find a way to get injured and the Bucks will finish 6-10 or something like that. It always happens. Speaking of Raymond James Stadium being next to Steinbrenner Field, I wish we could call like some shady guy that could maybe burn down Steinbrenner Field.
Weren't you just talking about one that lives in Montreal?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That might be it right there. Yeah. We need to get something needs to happen. We need to get that property and get it in Rays ownership. I don't know how you do it, but find a way to do it.
I'm glad we have this on tape just in case things do happen. We can refer back to this if there's any mysterious fire.
Yes.
But yeah, no, Kevin, I appreciate it, man. It was fun. The last 10 minutes, I think, was us being in isolation and we needed that. I feel like I could go another 30 minutes about anything right now. Really? Because people want to listen to
it. It really sucks.
Anything
like
sports.
Yeah. Like it'd be a little bit different if, we weren't living in Florida because like, I wouldn't mind being like, if I was living in Indiana, well, I'm sure the weather probably changes a little bit, but if I was living in a cold weather city, I'd be okay being cooped up because I don't like going outside when it's cold, but the weather, this is the perfect time of year for Florida weather. And you're almost being told and instructed and ordered to stay inside. And it's just a pain in my behind.
I hear you, man. Well, stay safe. Appreciate you coming on. Guys, if you want to follow, we always have some good back and forth with Ray's Twitter. So let's throw some people at you here. At Kevin Weiss _ he's on Twitter. You know, it's, if we play, hopefully we play very soon. It is going to be a battle. I do believe that between the Yankees and the Rays at the end on the field, the baseball field, going towards if it's a World Series or they get like, you know, some other torts, like a cup or some kind of a trophy. I don't know what they're going to give them, whoever wins this year, but appreciate it, man.
Of course, anytime. I'll say this. I think it'll be a difference regular season. It'll be a difference of 5 games between the Yankees and Rays.
5 games. If it's half a season, that's 10 games. If we're handicapping this, that's not that much. That seems like a lot, though.
Okay, so let me correct that then. 162 game season. If they find a way to do it, difference of 5 games.
Okay. That means it's going down to the end. That means it's going down to pitching in, you know, at the end of the season and who's healthy. I think probably that's what we're
absolutely
looking at.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man. Be good.
Thanks. Stay safe.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.